I'm in a position to know, because the Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like is not a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you?
No, I didn't think about that. I just thought that we ought to be like Brother Billy up in Chicago and do the way he does, because he thinks those black people are just wonderful in Chicago. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. This is White Aryan Resistance. And I am Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, here in the bunker right here where the sun's coming out. It was overcast all morning, but now the sun's out. And maybe that'll chase some of those mosquitoes away. Boy, we had I don't remember the mosquitoes being so bad last year. Well, let's see what's going on here. This is terrorism. This is what terrorists do. It isn't a war, not black against blue or us against them. No, it's just them against white cops. And then they'll come for you later. Reported two gunmen had opened fire Thursday night on police officers. On our police officers, they attacked us all. Well, I don't think so. I think are not that really thrilled with cops. All of a sudden, now they like cops. Stunned witnesses described a peaceful march. Well, anytime you get that many Negroes together, it can't be peaceful. Or at least it won't end up peaceful. With about 800 protesters, or would-be terrorists, gathered in downtown Dallas to register sorrow and concern over police-involved shootings this week in Baton Rouge and the suburban Minneapolis. What about all the white guys who've been pulled over and hassled and beat up and shot? You don't hear about that at all. They were escorted by about 100 police officers, our officers there, to act as protectors. Yeah, they were there to protect the crowd. The cops were peaceful. They were taking pictures with us and everything, one marcher told KXAS-TV, Channel 5. It was lovely, peaceful march, said another. You're being conned, boys. These press people are the ones that are conning you. The peace was shattered by terrorism, a well-planned and barbaric attack on that peace. In purposely murdering police officers, these gunmen did not further any cause or make any kind of statement that civilized people can understand. They opened fire literally on human decency. In the days ahead, some apologists, not many of them, but a few will take the line that these murdered officers are casualties of war. Well, I guess they would be, even if they don't even realize it themselves. They'll say this act was the culmination of countless provocations and frustrations. They'll try to frame some kind of context around this chaos. They'll say it's terrible, but no, it's just terrible. It's sickening, cowardly. It furthers no cause. Sure it does. It accomplishes nothing but misery and grief. Well, that's a cause. It's violence. For the deranged love of violence itself, disguised beneath political veneer. To employ a Texas colloquialism, it's chicken. Shit. Chicken shit with a gun. City officials and police departments train and drill and try to anticipate disaster, but how can we participate determined in humanity? You can't, not even if you're human. Yeah. You know what I've told you about the Jews infiltrating all the races to use them to their advantage? Well, Noah Levite and Helen Keong Kim's marriage is one of an increasing number of Jewish-Asian pairings in the U.S., a trend evident in many American synagogues. The two Whitman College professors have just released the first book-length study of Jewish-Asian couples and their offspring. Though Jew-Asian is geared towards social scientists, the chapters in which they excerpt and analyze their interviews with 34 Jewish-Asian couples will interest our readers curious about intermarriage in general and the evoking American Jewish community in particular. RNS asked Levite and Kim why Jews and Asians seem increasingly to fall for each other, while they so often opt for Judaism, and how they are raising their own Jewish Korean children. Question: Jewish-Asian marriages are on the rise. What did one of those marriages between Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg and Priscilla Chan in 2012 tell us about Jewish reaction to these couples? Kim: the coverage ranged from apathy to intense dismissal of him because he married someone who is assumed not to be Jewish. It was an immediate dismissal without knowing who they are or what their intentions are with regard to incorporating Judaism into the marriage or family life. We weren't surprised because that's what the narrative of Jewish intermarriage has largely been. Well, it's more than that. These things bubble underneath the surface quite a bit, so they can see their handwriting on the wall that the Asians are gaining more and more in influence, especially your Chinese and so forth. So they want to get in on the ground floor and infiltrate those people, like they did back when they ran China. Mongols actually ran China after they conquered it. They went around the Chinese wall. And then they brought in Jews to help them run the country because the Mongols didn't know how to do all the fancy accounting and so forth. So, and there's synagogues in China that are thousands of years old, so it's nothing new. Well, Kevin McDonald, a longtime activist and the professor that got ran off from California State University, has expressed his admiration for former Klansman David Duke. The short but bizarre post published last week on McDonald's Occidental Observer begins with a confirmation that he's been a guest on David Duke's radio show for some time, despite it being a difficult decision at first, unquote. McDonald then defends Duke, attacking the mainstream media for labeling Duke an ex-Klansman. Well, he is an ex-Klansman, saying that this is nothing more than the usual guilt by association argument. There is no question that Duke was once a Klansman. Well, there you go. I'll leave you decide the situation. Maybe you don't know who Kevin McDonald is. He's been around for quite a while. At some time in the past, I know I've had some contacts with him. Over in Indonesia, close to Java, they had a super traffic jam that held people up for days. They had to stay inside their cars, or they did. And a whole lot of people died just sitting in their cars waiting in this traffic jam, the world's longest traffic jam. Well, let's take a little memory trip back to 1992. Yeah. The recent extremely destructive riots in Los Angeles can hardly fail to remind Americans with a good knowledge of the 20th century European history of the riots in Germany in November 1938. Indeed, there are some notable similarities, or at least superficial similarities. There was a central element of racial hostilities as a causative factor in both tragedies. In both cases, property damage was extensive. Ms. Weichert, in her book, estimates that of approximately 1,400 synagogues in Germany, including the recently annexed Austria, at the time some 180 synagogues were destroyed or damaged. Of the CA 100,000 shops and department stores still owned by Jews, nearly 6 years after the National Socialists came to power, about 7,500 had their windows broken, whence the common name for the riots. There were comparable numbers of people killed. In the case of the Reichskristallnacht, one report places the number at 36, another at 91. In the case of the Los Angeles riots, the number of persons killed seems to total about 70. After the riots, the leading figures in both German and American governments were keenly aware of the resultant economic burdens. Goering, for example, was concerned about the loss of scarce foreign currency. Since the window glass needed to be replaced, the broken glass was manufactured in Belgium. The Germans were especially worried about the effects of the riots on public opinion in foreign countries. While the California riots can hardly enhance the reputation of the United States as a moral force in world public opinion, in both cases, a quite specific act of violence touched off the riots. In the case of Reichskristallnacht, the act of violence was a shooting on 7 November 1938 of an official of the German embassy in Paris by a young Polish Jew, Herschel Greenspan, who was apparently acting as an agent of the Zionist organization with headquarters in Paris, and who amazingly was never brought to trial for his crime. In fact, he survived the war. The German diplomat did not die from his wounds until after the riots started. Important or unimportant, though, these similarities might be, there are also important differences as prominent American political leaders as Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln had long ago recognized the serious conflicts between the Negro and the Caucasian component of the American population were likely to be a feature of American life in coming generations. The efforts to stimulate immigration of Negroes resulted in the foundation of the American Colonization Society in 1816 and the foundation of the Liberian Republic in 1847. Long before Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, in the midst of a desperate war between the states, even such Negro leaders as Marcus Garvey also saw the desirability of immigration of Negroes from the United States. By 1992, few Americans, Negro or Caucasian, envisioned immigration as a solution to racial problems. Well, my opinion is because a Negro, he likes white man's money, and he likes white man's goodies. And why shouldn't he? TV and everything the white man invents, he takes advantage of. So, what's the big mystery? No matter where the white race goes, the Negro is going to follow. American Negroes have a far more prosperous, easy life than they have in any other country. In Haiti or in any Negro republic in Africa, National Socialism, on the other hand, contemplated immigration of the Jews as a final solution to problems it considered to be endangered by the presence of Jews in Germany. The National Socialist government established agencies for the purpose of assisting Jews to immigrate, especially to Palestine, a British mandate at that time. These efforts on the part of the German government were largely frustrated by the angry resistance of the Palestinians and the unwillingness of the major powers to admit any Jews as immigrants, as the failure of the Evian Conference of 1938 demonstrated. The possibilities of Madagascar as a homeland for Jews were also eliminated by the circumstances of war. Well, that's not entirely true. They sent a team of engineers and demographers down there to Madagascar and to check it out. And they said there was not enough infrastructure there. There was there was too many things against the Jews surviving on Madagascar, so they didn't promote sending them down there. The riots of 19... If they hated the Jews, why wouldn't they just dump them down there and say, to hell with you? The riots of 1992 were almost entirely confined to Los Angeles, while the Reichskristallnacht was a tragedy which occurred in many localities. The former were characterized by a great deal of looting, while looting was only a minor feature of the Reichskristallnacht. The American media played a large role in causing the riots, especially the television networks, which they do the same thing now, which repeatedly ran the edited film showing police efforts to subdue the strong Negro with a criminal record who was resisting arrest. What changes? Nothing changes. You cannot have these intellectually stupid people in your midst. At least a big percentage of their race is always going to have a problem, and they're going to respond. You know, like I've said, I think I said yesterday, what they need is animal control. When they want to give a black a ticket, they don't need cops. They need animal control because they react violently all the time. German political leaders, on the other hand, knew very well what they had to lose by riots and swiftly put a stop to them. The causes of the riots of 1992 are fairly clear, while the identity of the instigators of the Reichskristallnacht remain unclear even to this day. The author, Miss Weichert, finds strong evidence that the Reichskristallnacht was the immediate result of efforts by foreign agents, perhaps Zionist agents whose objective was stimulation of immigration of Jews to Palestine. She believes that these agents might have provoked the riots by means of false orders telephoned to offices of the National Socialist Party in various regions. The 1938 riots were and still are portrayed as an ugly stain on the National Socialist government in power from 1933 to 1945. They are still emphasized by detractors of National Socialism in particular and the German nation in general. The Reichskristallnacht was of crucial importance in damaging the reputation of Germany among the nations of the world at the very time when Germany was attempting to overcome some of the worst features of the Versailles Treaty. Amongst Germans themselves, the Reichskristallnacht had a tendency to dampen the previous widespread of enthusiasm for National Socialism and its successes. It remains to be seen to what extent the Los Angeles riots of 1992 will have damaged the reputation of the United States during the coming years. However, export markets are far less vital to the United States of 1992 than they were to Germany in 1938. Well, we all know who benefits by this problem. Of course, the corporate media and whoever their handlers are the ones that really stoke these things up. It's so obvious. I mean, it's immediately the dirty white cop. No matter what happens, it's the dirty white cop. Well, we can only go on like this so long until it breaks down into the poor whites rising up too, and unfortunately a large percentage of the poor whites in the urban areas are going to rise up alongside the Negro, and then you're going to have a real problem. But you're not only going to have to kill blacks, you're going to have to kill white people. Well, let's go back to 1992 again, and an article by Eric Thompson called Must We Despair? Eric Thompson was around for a long time. I never met the man, but he's prolific writer. He's a good writer, and I'm not sure whether he's still with us or not. Anyhow, how many times have we heard fellow Aryans say, we are overwhelmingly outnumbered, and or we are totally outmaneuvered by the Jews, and or we are totally dominated and controlled by the Zionist occupation government? And then how many times has the same speaker concluded, therefore the Aryan race is doomed? probably everyone in the struggle for Aryan survival has heard this funeral dirge and theme and variations of many of those who say they would like our race to survive, but who claim that our struggle is in vain and have therefore thrown in the proverbial towel and withdrawn from the struggle. To these Aryan defeatists, I would like to point out, one, that no one can opt out of a struggle, except perhaps by death, and even this option is uncertain. In view of our race's belief in reincarnation, which goes back to our pre-Judeo-Christian alienation, for it was the inculcation of the so-called Christianity which partially severed our roots of racial memory, almost as effectively as race mixing itself. Wherever we seek to hide in the ongoing struggle, we will betray ourselves, for the color of our skin is our uniform, as Commander Rockwell said many years ago. Even Aryan traitors who serve the enemies of our race will be dealt with fatally by their non-Aryan masters once they see that there are insufficient numbers of Aryans to deceive by means their Aryan Shabbos Goyim or frontmen. Thus it is even our traitors depend upon our survival for their survival. As for the Jews, they could not begin to survive in their present numbers were it not for their wonderful Aryan milk cows. Imagine for a moment if the Jews were condemned to live off the effects, the efforts of black slaves. You know, black slaves are very inefficient, far more inefficient than the white working people of the South. But they were very good for making money for the man, even though they were very inefficient. For a moment, if the Jews were condemned to live off the efforts of black slaves, black scientists, black inventors, black taxpayers, and black farmers, how few the Jews would be, and how poor they would be, as compared to the hordes of affluent and idle Jews presently sustained by Aryan civilization. This is not to say that the Jew will be smart enough to maintain sufficient numbers of Aryans in order to maintain the benefits of Aryan civilization, for it is in the Jew's mad race-mixed nature to destroy all that is superior, intelligent, healthy, productive, and beautiful. The Jew cannot fight his own nature, but that does not mean that we must be accomplices in our own extinction. We can fight the Jew, but this we must sincerely do in every aspect of our lives and with every fiber of our beings. I'd like to point out that there is no justification for despair. Despair is the loss of hope. The key word and key to despair is loss. Our defeatist Aryans are homeless because they have, having lost something, or their fear that something will be inevitably lost. Let us see what we have lost and what we stand to lose through the actions of our enemies and by the inaction of our fellow Aryans. It is well said that a cynic is a disappointment, a delusionist, delusioned romantic. Some people are disappointed and become prone to cynicism. Well, that's me. When they discover the truth behind Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy. Others become cynical and even despairing when they find out that freedom does not exist under democracy, which itself does not and has not existed. Our parents and the schools to which they entrust us can be faulted for including inculcation of these illusions. But once we have become disillusioned, and there's no excuse for behaving as lifelong victims and or political cripples. Once we have a good idea of the kind of world we live in, it is our choice to sink or swim in it. Those who prefer to sink should have the decency to drown themselves as quickly and as quietly as possible, so as not to discourage those who are just learning to swim. The loss of illusions is indeed a gain. If we wish to live as Aryans and not Asiatic lotus eaters, let us look at some illusions which defeatists seem to view as losses. We have lost a great numbers of our race through the actions of our enemies. We have lost a great we've lost great territories. We have lost and are lost control of our governments, our religions, our possessions, our freedoms, our way of life. Further losses are threatened on all fronts. Certainly, the Aryan has not distinguished himself by thinking or acting on behalf of the Aryan race any more than the mosquito thought about avoiding DDT. Yes, large numbers of the mosquitoes were killed by DDT, just as large numbers of Aryans have been killed by Judeo-Christianity. But the mosquitoes who survived in the initial onslaught of the DDT bred further generations which were increasingly resistant to the poison. I hope that Aryans have a similar capability, which is basically bound up with their desire to survive. Those who wish to survive will purge themselves of Judeo-Christian poison, and they will see to it that the future generations are immunized. Nature is doing this for us. Even if large numbers of Aryans must die, history shows that some will survive to form the nucleus for Aryan resurgence. We must accept the losses which the Aryan chooses to inflict upon himself. Our race will be the better for the absence of such people in the ongoing struggle for Aryan survival, the only prerequisite being the serious wish to survive as Aryans. Let us look at other losses. It is only true to say that one cannot lose that which he never possessed. How many Europeans are really Aryans, for example? Europe, like North America, is merely a geographical expression. Although most white people or Aryans are to be found in Europe, there are large numbers of Europeans with black and yellow admixtures, just as they are in North America. Aryan is a biological, not a geographical concept, and it's behavioral. I have observed blonde, blue-eyed, fair-skinned offspring of parents I know to be part black or yellow. In the book Genetics of the Jews by A.E. Morant and so on, the authors of which are hematologists and Jews themselves, they state a summary that even the blondest Jews have from 5 to 10% Negro marker genes. Of course, when one adds the necessary Mongol percentage of the Ashkenazim or white Jews, the Aryan percentage shrinks even more. If white Jews cannot be classified as Aryans, then what about non-Jews who have similar racial admixtures? Indeed, many people whom we thought of as white or Aryan may well have been race-mixed with certain predominant Aryan features. The loss of the race-mixed is an undiluted blessing of our race, for it is miscegenation which causes the loss of understanding, and from this, all evil. In the words of our Aryan ancestors who conquered India, are there any evil Aryans? This we can only discover when we live in a society of pure Aryans, otherwise we may never know. The behavioral aspect of race is perhaps the most important distinction and the least studied. Values determine behavior, and values emanate from race. Each race has its own peculiar concept of God. The Hebrew God is certainly congruent with the racial emanations of its followers, who glorify deceit and murderous assaults upon the Hebrew host populations. The Aryans of Europe stock have been ill-served by their adoption of the son of this Asiatic demon as their god, for in no way does this god correspond to the behavior or aspirations of pure Aryans. Jew authors have said to themselves, thereby adding the proverbial insult to injury. Although the insult should give Aryans cause to cease conjuring themselves by not adhering to the alien creed of Judeo-Christianity, whenever you see outwardly appearing Aryans behaving like hysterical dervishes in the Judeo-Christian churches or playing thunderous rap as they drive down the street, please consider if any of this can be Aryan behavior. Since it is not, can we consider such people as Aryans? I do not. If I cannot think and live as an Aryan, then I care not if my tormentors are blonde, blue-eyed, or fair-skinned. And here is the essence of our struggle. It stems from the undeniable wish to live according to our Aryan values. those values are innate and they emanate in everything we do and say and think. The Jew can feel these emanations and he reacts with hysterical hostility whenever he encounters them. What did I say wrong? Thinks the innocent Aryan. It was not what you said, but who you revealed yourself to be. That drove the Jew into his fearful frenzy. We are engaged in a cosmic struggle of being, of which the Jew, but not Aryan, is fully aware. In order for the Aryan to become aware, he must first be awakened. Aryans must cease their dreaming in the Jew's media fantasy land. The huge territorial losses suffered by the Aryan race need not be permanent. The collapse of Aryan civilization will produce a population crash amongst the huge numbers of non-Aryans who presently feast upon it. As for losing control of our governments, we must first make sure they were ours to begin with. Speaking as an American with two ancestors who signed the so-called Declaration of Independence, I can honestly and objectively state that it's a major premise that all men are created equal is mischievous nonsense. Not even Aryans are created equal from the conception onwards. Why did my ancestors sign this nonsensical document? Perhaps they were drunk at the time, or perhaps their minds were clouded by Judeo-Freemasonic hypnosis. This only reveals that Aryans are not gods, nor are they perfect. Otherwise, they would have not got themselves into their present dire straits. Perhaps they were just not very bright. In other words, from its very beginnings, the United States was established upon the grounds of an alien and erroneous philosophy. Today we can see the logical outcome of the nonsense. Affirmative action and enforced equality, which is the ultimate nonsense. It was this fallacious preamble of equality which was original sin or fatal flaw in the foundation of the United States. It was further compounded by the Constitution, which was touted as a government of law, not men. As we know, law is a statement of values, and values emanate from race. This is what white people are being taught by black people in Los Angeles and in other cities. Under whose laws will we be governed? White laws can be fully applicable to white people, but there must be exceptions for blacks sufficient for them to be above the law. The blacks are teaching the whites a very important lesson, and I hope the whites are paying attention. The second sin in the establishment of the United States was in the Judeo-Freemasonic founder's insistence that laws could be substituted for racial and individual quality. The Constitution, like money, is only as valuable as the people who back it. If the people are worthless crooks, then no bit of paper will correct the situation which such people bring about. It is people, not laws, who make the difference. By insisting otherwise, the founders of the United States are guilty of hubris, that arrogance which offends the gods and nature, similar to the depicted in the Tower of Babel in the Jew book. We have seen one unwieldy Judeo-monstrosity fall asunder, the Soviet Union. There is one domino remaining, the United States. Its collapse will be the rescue of the Aryan world remnant, and sooner the better. The United States was never ours to begin with, so how could we Aryans ever lose it? As for Christianity and its poisonous splinter sects, that never was ours either, and its loss to non-Aryans is a healthy thing for our race. The loss of our freedoms and our Aryan way of life, such as they have been, are in direct proportion to the demonization of Aryans in the general population. To regain these important aspects of Aryan behavior, we must naturally seek out fellow Aryans in order to form Aryan communities. If we do not do this, then we must prepare to exercise our Aryan values as best we can in isolation. Many, if not most, Aryans seem to fear the loss of their material possessions and their means of gaining such things. The Zionist government in the United States does not recognize anyone's right of ownership. If you are surprised at that, it simply means you have not read the papers.
Any person accused of illegal activity or tax evasion can be dispossessed of all his property and personal possessions. He and his relatives can be stripped as naked as jaybirds any minute of the day by armed bandits of the United States government and or lesser jurisdictions. It is all perfectly legal. The rule of knowledgeable Aryans, therefore, is to possess nothing which you cannot defend. As unorganized as we Aryans are, that is all we can defend, nothing. If Aryans love their possessions more than their race, which seems to be the case, they maybe one day decide to organize themselves politically on behalf of their TV sets, refrigerators, and beach buggies. If not, then they love their possessions no more than they love their race, and the loss of something one does not love is no loss at all. Aryans, like members of all races and parts thereof, fear losing their lives, yet reality-prone Aryans know that the loss is inevitable. Worst of all is the loss of health before the loss of life. That is why Aryan Odinus prayed for death in battle rather than a straw death or dying in bed, which was not only often more painful, but considerably shameful. They clearly valued a life of good quality, however short, to one of dreary servitude, however long. German Aryans have a wise saying, better a horrible than an endless horror. Perhaps the most recent proponent of Aryan thinking was Patrick Henry, who said, give me liberty or give me death. Aryans, being the most human of races, are therefore among the most adaptable. We were not born with thick skins, fur, long fangs, claws, so we had to invent substitutes which turned out to be much better. The circumstances in which we find ourselves besieged by the hordes of Zion in our own societies demand of us our best terms of adaptability and moral courage. That is, for those of us who truly wish to survive as Aryans, those who survive this onslaught will be Aryans indeed. That was excellent. I'm going to photocopy that and send it around to prisoners and so forth. That was a great article. Let's journey in time back to 1984, talking about elections and voting. Ballot box, 1984, the total sham. Nothing ever changes. Election year again, and all the usual ballyhoo about new faces, a change, and so forth. The entire range of puppets is trotted out onto the stage by the manipulators, once again duping the average Joe into thinking he has a choice, a voice, an opportunity to make things better. There are a few of the dumb masses and asses who have finally gotten wise to the old shell game conducted by Tweedledee Republicans and Tweedledum Democrats, aided and abetted by their media masters. These few then seek to change things and the right of the ship of state through the formation of that always ill-fated third party. They make an effort, and for that we admire them, despite their naivete, by offering the majority a palatable platform, appealing to patriotism, nationalism, and though reveled, sometimes even racial instincts. Much effort is expended, much money spent, much optimism generated, in the end only to meet with predestined failure and a further disillusionment and disappointment. Tell me about it. I went through three or four parties, third parties, continually losing. I felt like I was on the Eastern Front. We don't deride the effort by means to point the finger of pity, indeed. Were there a chance for success, we would throw everything we had behind the effort to dislodge the oppressors. It's just that we have, having passed through the stage of maturity, realized that here is a group going through the same growth period. Whether or not they will learn from their failure is conjectural. At best, a few will. And therein lies success of a failure, out of failure. A few more wake-ups, and we grow. We like to save those third-party folks the efforts of telling them that they can't win against a stacked deck. that history proves despotic regimes will not relinquish power through any so-called legal means, that their efforts are doomed to suffer either the silent treatment, or that if they were able to generate enough popular backing to pose even the slight threat, assassination would follow. We'd like to tell our third party... Whoa, wait a minute here. We'd like to tell our third party friends to pool their money and place their efforts behind a truly revolutionary movement. We'd like to do all those things, but you see, that's not the way nature works. As with a child, the lesson must be learned through experience. Hopefully then, the experience will bring maturity and wisdom. As much as we'd like to save our friends that heartbreak of disappointment and disillusionment, we can't. They're conditioned to regard anyone of our persuasion as radical fools, and so on. Our words are lost on them. As mentioned, it's an ill wind that blows no good. A few will realize that the system can be fought and our people saved from extinction in only one way. Our numbers will grow as things get worse, and every day brings us closer to 1776. And it will come. It would come even sooner if our people would wake up to the con game worked by the establishment in the form of the elephant and, appropriately, the jackass. The voice of pessimism, you say? A natural reaction. Experience remains the best teacher, and time proves the validity of a pronouncement such as the one we make. That's just the way it is. We welcome you with open arms at our journey's end, Brother Aryan. And one more here, should we use the word Aryan? Recently I had an argument with a young editor about the word which had occurred in the text which I was trying to translate as accurately as inherent differences in the German sentence structure and the vocabulary would permit. The word was Aryan, used in an adjective in connection with nations. The translation was being prepared for a scholarly journal with the revisionistic objectives. The young editor wanted to change the word to Western. I protested that this change would constitute a falsification of the meaning of the original text. I also argued that such a change would be an accommodating euphemism and a concession to our enemies, who would like to denigrate this word out of our vocabulary for well-calculated reasons of their own. Indeed, this venerable word has been denigrated by the enemies of the Aryan nations to such an extent that most Aryans in Europe and the United States are hesitant to use it, let alone proudly to apply it to themselves. By contrast, does anyone dispute the right of a minority race to determine how it will designate itself? Look at the blacks. They've changed three or four times in the last 20 years. Nearly all the major languages of Europe are related to each other, with the notable exceptions of Finnish, Estonian, and Hungarian. Thus, for example, the Russian word try is quite similar to the English cognate three. As another example, the ancient Indian word raja is related to the Latin word rex, both words meaning king. The ancient Germanic form of this word is Reich, meaning kingdom. It appears in modern German as Reich, which has assumed a somewhat different meaning. At this point, we must be careful to differentiate between cognates, such as the two examples given above, and loan words, such as the English word paternal, which has been taken into the English from the Latin. Cognates are words that have a common origin. Indo-European languages contain many obvious cognates, especially those words which refer to parts of the body and family relationships in addition to pronouns and numbers. These cognates allow us to reconstruct to some extent the language which was spoken by Indo-Europeans before the invention of writing and from the various later Indo-European languages evolved. By reconstructing the original Indo-European language, we can gain some idea of the cultural level of its speakers. By examining the cognates which designate plants and animals, we even have obtained at least a vague indication of the place where the Indo-Europeans originally lived, which is thought to be around the area of Lithuania. You know, it's interesting. Lithuania has such a high number of Aryans and beautiful Aryan women, from what I'm told. We refer to the large group of related European languages as Indo-European or Indo-Germanic. These languages were spoken even in ancient times as far to the northwest as Scandinavia and as far southeast as Persia and India, where they were the languages of the dominant elite who imposed them on a native population. They've also been designated as the Aryan languages. Although the Aryan languages were originally spoken only by Caucasians, they are now spoken by millions and millions of South American Indians, African Negroes, some members of the Caucasian race such as Semites and Finns speak or spoke languages which are in no way related to the Indo-European languages. This fact is strong evidence that racial differences in mankind are so ancient that they evolved even before complicated linguistic expression evolved in man. Arabic and Hebrew are closely related and have readily recognizable cognates in their vocabularies. The early languages of the major racial divisions of mankind are completely unrelated, and there are unrelated languages even within these major racial divisions. The root or basic syllable contained in the word Aryan appears in a number of Indo-European languages. It has cognates in such geographical diverse languages as ancient Persian and Old Irish. In fact, there seems little doubt that the names of the countries Iran and Ireland, Ire, are cognates. In ancient times, the roots of these words were used in the sense of noble or nobleman. And that's the way I use it, white people who deserve to be called Aryans. White people who don't deserve to be called Aryans, I just call just white people. A Greek cognate might be the word Dristos, meaning the best man, which furnishes the loan word aristocrat in English. The root appears in ancient Germanic masculine names. A Latin cognate might be Oriens, or which the meaning is only distantly related. The Orient is the place where the sun rises, thus suggesting a semantic relationship relation to the idea of nobleman who occupies a risen position. The Persian form of the word was taken over into Greek as a loan word as early as the time of the Greek historian Herodotus, who died in 425 B.C. In modern times, a French translator of ancient Persian religious literature, Mr. Perron, again introduced the Persian word to Europe in 1763. It was subsequently applied to a designation of all the Indo-European languages during the 19th century. Count Joseph Arthur Gobineau, the author of the famous and influential four-volume work, The Origins of the Races, further popularized the word, extending its meaning to a racial designation. The composer Richard Wagner also used the word in 1881 as a racial designation, particularly to differentiate Aryans from Jews as non-Aryans. The term Aryan was used commonly in Germany during the National Socialist period. As a result of the overreaction and propaganda against National Socialist practices, the status of the word has been unjustifiably jeopardized since then. Nevertheless, the word Aryan was used even in the New York Times of 22nd of April 1984 in an article on Sri Lankans. In spite of the various applications in modern times, the word Aryan as a designation of non-Semitic members of the Caucasian race has no other convenient equivalent. Aryans should use this word as a designation of themselves without any apologies. They should insist on using it when giving information to gatherers of census data, for example. The colors white, black, and so on are designations of the Caucasian. Negro and other races are commonly used, but have the decided disadvantage of implying that differences in these races are only a matter of skin color. A dangerous fallacy propagated by those who wish to promote discord in the Aryan nations. We are thus left with the word Aryan as a useful, convenient, and precise racial designation. There you go. So use the word Aryan. Well, don't have to say you're a Caucasian. You're an Aryan. And that's the end of my reading from the Liberty Bell Library that I have. I have a large percentage of the Liberty Bell magazines that we have recently, in the last few years, due to the help of our men on the East Coast that helped me do the show for quite some time. He copied them and put them on so we could put them on the internet, and you can go up to our website and download all these great articles from Liberty Bell magazine. George Dietz was the publisher. He's been long gone, but he was a great man. And that's going to be it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back with you on Moon's Day. We'll have some archive shows over the weekend, and I hope you have a good weekend watching the news, watching the 100th monkey roll into position. Also, Operation Chaos, and I think we're going to really hit a peak in Operation Chaos at the Republican convention. I can't wait. But I'm not going to go there, and I don't suggest you go there either. I know there's some yahoo young guys out there that belong to these various Hollywood racial groups. They want to go there to get their picture in the paper. Well, it's getting rougher and rougher out there in the streets. And if you don't think it's going to break out into actually a lot of killing on both sides in the future, you're sadly mistaken. So if you're going to wear your swastika shirt, you better have a bulletproof vest underneath. But it's a waste of time for a strong young white man, even though he is not a coward, he's very brave, to waste his life and leave his blood on the streets of Cleveland. Don't do it any more than leaving your blood on the trails of Afghanistan. It's all bad. Now, this is the sounds, I believe, of a white man when he gets into it with a cop. He's not trying to kill the cop, but he's pissed off at the cop. Listen to this.
You're ripping me off, and I didn't deserve it, because I didn't do nothing wrong. You're wasting my... You're ripping me off, and I didn't deserve it because I didn't do nothing wrong. Your body set down pipeline driveway. Don't fuck get someone in the 40 miles or whatever it is. I never saw the sign. I saw it 55, and I was doing 57. That's all I know. Now just give me the damn thing, and I'll look at the date. If I'm working, I'll pay the fine because I can't afford to take a day off. And if I'm not working, I'll plead not guilty because I know well I'm not guilty. There. Now, are you a state or local? Looks like you're a state trooper. Get back to pick up some more guys and run up the deficit on working men. Just give me the damn thing. Let me get out of here.
What I need you to do is sound the X so I can explain this to you.
There ain't no explaining. I got picked up for speeding before. You're guilty and you paid the fine and hope your insurance don't go up. And you try not to speed the next time. That's what I've been trying to do for 4 or 5 years, and it's worth damn good. Do I run into you, you a**?
Green copy's for your record, sir.
I don't... All right.
White copy needs to be mailed in within 20 days.
Okay.
Read the back of this hard copy. This will explain how you can have a trial if you want. On the back, that will explain it. Attaches an envelope. See? Put a stamp on that, you mail that in. They'll tell you what to do.
I can afford the stamp.
The fine's right here, sir. It's $137.50.
You're crazy! I get it! You're crazy! My wife took money out of her damn account where she's working to pay my insurance so I wouldn't get picked up last. You're crazy!
If you don't pick this up, sir, I'm going to summon you for littering.
I'll pick the are you crazy? I won't give a speed at you, $107!
There's some more right there.
I've never heard of a phone like that in my life, you
But he didn't shoot the cop, did he? And the cop didn't shoot him. That's how it works. Negroes don't understand the concept. They just don't get it. They're willing to die over an argument over a stupid ticket. Which reminds me that they act very much like chimpanzees. If you've ever seen chimpanzees get in a fight in the zoo, they just freak out and go crazy and throw themselves down and jump out of trees. Yeah, well, that's where it comes from. It's got to come from that.